As GB News launched, Andrew Neil, its then chairman and flagship presenter, said the channel would empower those who feel their stories, their opinions, their concerns have been ignored or diminished, and that it would be an alternative to the media establishment dominated by a metropolitan mindset. Bit of a low blow there, Andrew. Neil, whether you agree or disagree with his positions, came with a huge reputation and clearly had lofty ambitions for the outlet. But just 2 weeks after going on air, he took leave before eventually quitting and saying that joining the channel was a huge mistake. So it's fair to say things didn't get off to a good start, and it was easy to take the piss out of it, and it still often is. But it's still going. Its presenters are putting questions to the Prime Minister and heading out on government press trips, including ones which the BBC hasn't made it on. So is it time to take it seriously, regardless of our own political stripes? Here to discuss this with me is Will Turville, Associate Editor of Press Gazette and a media correspondent for The New Statesman. Hi, Will.
Hello.
Will, after Neil quit, he said, "I think GB News is still haunted by the shambles of the launch and that will take a long while to overcome." Has it?
I would actually say I think it has overcome the shambles of the launch. Like it or not, it's still around. It's been around 2 years. It's established itself in the UK media. It's got an audience. It seems to be growing from everything we've seen. So yeah, I think as you say, I mean the departure of Andrew Neil was a big blow to people who joined GB News. If you remember when it around the time it was launching, people were saying it's going to be the Fox News of Britain, which, you know, and a lot of people would say that it's lived up to that. But I think the involvement of Andrew Neil at that stage would have really, if you were a journalist at an established news organisation, you'd think, "Oh, do I want to join the Fox News of Britain? No. Do I want to join a channel that has Andrew Neil at the top of it, one of the best and most well-known journalists in the country? Yeah, I think I'd probably give that a go." So yeah, it was a massive blow losing him. And he said it would take a long time to recover. I kind of feel like it has in some ways.
Was it always going to be hard with Andrew Neil, them saying they were an anti-establishment channel and then taking on a figure who had been so intrinsically tied to the BBC? It's quite hard to say we're going to push against this establishment, and by doing that, we're going to take someone who has chaired The Spectator and been a massive figure at the BBC too. Was that always a bit of a strange signing there?
Yeah, I guess so. In that sense, yeah. I guess there'd always be a feeling that Andrew Neil wasn't quite, he definitely was establishment in some ways, but he was always seen as kind of right of centre establishment. You know, he's a guy who's on the BBC, but he's also the chairman of The Spectator. And I think a lot of people would say that the BBC and The Spectator are very different organisations, but I can understand what you mean. Yeah, absolutely.
When you're pushing against stuff, was him quitting almost a bit of a paper there for them to go, "Well, he's quitting, we're going to prove all the naysayers wrong, and even him, he's a naysayer now, so we're going to prove all of that wrong"? Did that kind of push it along a little bit?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. And I guess the thing is that the journalists that I'm talking about, the journalists who might have been on the fence about whether to join an organisation that was being built up as a Fox News, I think anyone who thought that and then was crestfallen to see Andrew Neil leave, they've probably all gone now as well. So you'd think maybe there's you'd think that it would be a bit like, you know, a Jose Mourinho type siege mentality is built up there or something. You could imagine that, couldn't you, where they're the underdog. They had Andrew Neil, so they were the underdog with a great figurehead, and then they lost him, and now they're an underdog with no, well, particularly well-known figurehead. So yeah, you can see how that would spur them on, I think, yeah.
Was our understanding of what they meant by being a Fox News maybe a little bit warped, that we thought that meant they would be this huge media entity in the way that Fox News is, but it was never going to have as big an audience as that because we're not in America and there's not as many people. But also, Fox News it's a real vehicle for political force and political change and making things happen, whether you like it or not. GB News can do that whether it's big or not. So was it maybe the way it was framed as the Fox News wasn't about it being this massive, successful media organization? It was about it making change and disrupting in the way that Fox News can.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that's a good point. And I guess from their perspective, for them, any comparison with Fox News, which divisive as it is very popular. So if they can make comparisons, if there are comparisons between them and Fox News, and they're doing a good job in the sense of attracting a large audience.
So what's changed? Is it just the staff, or is it the tack of the channel?
I think it's the staff. I was thinking about this on the walk over, actually. So at the beginning, when it launched, you had people who had come straight out of journalism school or university in some cases. I think there was a quote in one of the New Statesman's articles on this around a year ago by Stuart McGurk. One of the things that stood out to me was that there was an anonymous senior member of staff quoted as saying that one of the junior members of staff, he thought or she thought, had never read a newspaper before. So you could imagine that at the beginning there would have been, you know, they weren't, it was a bootstrap organization. But 2 years on, like I say, you've got anyone who was disheartened by what it became has left, and the junior members of staff who started 2 years ago have now got 2 years of experience. They've either left, they've been booted out, or they've learnt. And so I think the main thing that's changed for them probably is they've really honed it. You know, they started off when they probably weren't ready to start, when they weren't actually ready for launch, but they launched anyway. They learnt on the job, and you know, after this amount of time, you'd think they would have improved. And I think clearly, technically, they have improved.
Commercially, how is GB News doing?
Yes, so currently we're not 100% sure, but they did release their company's house figures a couple of weeks ago, earlier this month. And so in the year to May 2022, they had revenues of 3.6 million and they made a loss of £31 million, which doesn't sound good. I think probably they would say, and you know, lots of business reporters who cover startups would say the £31 million loss, yeah, fair enough. You'd think that, you know, they got some big, deep-pocketed investors who would have expected it to make a loss. What surprised me more actually was the £3.6 million of revenue. I think they might have expected a bit more than that. But like I say, that was the year to May 2022, so we're nearly a year on from that. I suspect they would have grown significantly. I think it's unlikely they are making a profit yet, but I would have thought they brought down their losses a little bit. And I was passed on a note that the chief executive sent out to staff at the end of February, I think it was, or earlier this month. And he said that they were moving into their third phase of development. So first phase was launch. Second phase was building up a big loyal audience. And the third phase now is, to quote, financial sustainability and profit. Which suggests they're not there yet.
Yeah, the channel seems to have, the attention around it has died down somewhat, and it feels to me more like a normal TV channel. It's functioning to an extent, but that's coincided with the output going a bit more wacky, to be polite, would you say? Have you seen that crossover happen where it's gone, yeah, the presentation has got more like what you'd expect from a traditional television channel, but what is on it is certainly not what you would be expecting.
Yeah, I think in terms of the wackiness, I'm not sure, because I guess it's difficult to form a full view on that unless you watch it. And as luck would have it, one of my colleagues, Bron Maher of Press Gazette, spent yesterday watching GB News from start to finish.
Okay.
Which was for a Press Gazette.
The first person to ever do it.
Possibly. No, I wouldn't have thought so. I would have thought there'll be people around the country who've got it on all the time. I kind of thought that maybe the wackiness you're talking about might just be a phenomenon on social media. He says that actually, there's a lot of strange stuff going on there. You know, some of it you'd expect. Maybe if you watched if you strapped yourself into a chair and watched Sky News for 14 hours, you'd come up with something similar. But you know, so I just took a few notes of things that he mentioned. So in the evening, it's Dan Wootton speaking about the MSM, which is, you know,
of course,
he's
a poker us where you can.
He is a product of the MSM himself, and he
still writes for The Sun, does he not?
The Mail, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, but that's a big thing. Eamon Holmes sounds like he's a good laugh. He was talking about he invited his co-host to touch his tie, which was worth which he paid £135 for. Apparently, he described Rishi Sunak as a tiny little leprechaun. And he also said that he wishes he could talk to his dog. So I think, you know, and this is the sort of stuff that I doubt that's on social media or that people are noticing it. So there's a lot going on there.
What we see on social media, though, you know, like Matt Letizia, The Coast Guy, Lawrence Fox, Nigel Farage, is that part of its strategy there, that it maybe doesn't want to dominate in the TV space? It needs to dominate more widely. And that's why we're seeing these kind of reactive, reactionary viewpoints that get spread and go viral. Is that part of the strategy?
Yeah, I guess it's really important, isn't it, to in general, they've obviously, they and Talk TV have launched channels and thought, we want to be on normal television. So they obviously think there's still an audience and that's going to be around for a while. But I think there must be a recognition as well that most people, they've got a much wider potential audience online. And I know they're keen to build up their US audience as well. They recently gave their website a .com rather than .co.uk. So yeah, I think that's all important. And it's got to be quite, you know, I'm sure it's the case in lots of newsrooms around the country. You want to find things that go viral. And I guess in their case, they can actually use their hosts and on-screen talent to go viral.
Mm. Do you think the website will work? Because we've seen, I noticed, for example, The Express. There was a day on Twitter where it seemed like every single report from The Express was moving to America to report from there. And clearly there's a vision for expansion into an American market. But I remember Global a few years ago, didn't they? They did their own news website, and it seemed to, again, they were very excited about it, and then it just sort of wound down, and it's clips from LBC now. Do you think the GB News can actually do that? Do you think that would be successful for it? Or are they taking off a little bit more than they can chew already because they've got the ducks in a row here, and then they go, we can do a website too, and it's a whole different kettle of fish, really.
Mm. I guess success isn't guaranteed, but I think their idea of getting a US audience is interesting and could be a good strategy for them, at least in terms of getting lots of clicks and lots of people watching it. Because and this is a phenomenon that I've been watching quite closely for Press Gazette, but as you say, The Express just sent a load of people over to America. The Mirror and The Express and The Irish Star, oddly, have all recently launched in the US. The Sun's got a big operation there. The Mail's obviously got a big established operation there. And the thing is, all of these news websites were getting lots of hits from the US already. Like, there's this big US audience that potentially is underserved. No idea who they are. I don't I mean,
well,
who knows?
I suppose if you can get to a smaller market in the US, it's still potentially as big as the market here, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you're running a news website, then if you can make it in the US, then that's really valuable. So yeah, I would have thought GB News would be looking at that and thinking, I don't know, maybe we won't set up a bureau there or anything at this stage. But why not just try and get lots of US clicks?
We mentioned complaints. You mentioned the regulators there. What's the deal with complaints, though? Because Ofcom, for example, it's not particularly proactive, it wouldn't appear to me. It requires complaints to act. And is that why we're not really seeing very much happen in the way of stopping what's going on with GB News? Because I just see that there's a Twitter storm about it every few days, and then there's a Twitter storm about it every few days, and it doesn't really seem to stop this happening. So, yeah, what's going on there?
Yeah, I think GB News would probably say that they are quite keen to not be the subject of Ofcom complaints. I mean, you know, there's the departure of Mark Steyn recently. So I don't know. I wonder. I think you're probably right that Ofcom doesn't have someone who's just watching, who's doing a Bron Maher of Press Gazette and watching 14 hours of GB News a day. But then I guess they'd probably say, well, it's not the biggest channel out there anyway. And there are lots of other, if we were to watch every single television channel all the time, then yeah. But yeah, I think this kind of possibly goes back to the point that when they launched and what goes on social media, that gets a lot of attention. But I guess what's being lost is, you know, what's going on for the other 10 and a half hours of the day.
Is it an issue of regulators not being able to keep up with the changing media landscape, which we've seen for years now, in that, yeah, as you say, maybe there aren't that many people watching GB News, but then millions of people are seeing these clips on Twitter. And I witness them, and it's usually people are very outraged and complain about them. But for everyone who complains about it and says how horrible it is, there's probably other people who silently are watching it and going, oh, you know what, maybe there is this big conspiracy that's going on behind the scenes. Is there an issue that Ofcom isn't on the front foot there? It's not really learning how to deal with broadcast to social media and this slipstream which we're witnessing.
Yeah, and to be fair, it's difficult, isn't it? Because there's just a huge amount going on online. And also the thing is, I haven't seen the latest figures on this, but I know that the general trend is that the BBC, for instance, is getting lots more complaints on its coverage. So if you're Ofcom, it's a well-funded regulator, but it hasn't got all the time and all the resources in the world, so it's really got to pick its battles, I suppose, to an extent.
So it gets kind of swamped out, I suppose, because there's so many more people watching the BBC and then likely to make sort of superfluous complaints which don't really matter that much, and then the GB News ones go down and down the list. And again, it's also, I suppose, do you think the established media buys into that as well? Because the Daily Mail, for example, let's be honest, we know hates the BBC. So they're going to make a big fuss about complaints against the BBC. And you'll see these online stories of how many complaints were made about a bit of BBC coverage. And you don't see that about GB News. Do you think that's a bit of the pack mentality between the media happening there, and the qualms they perhaps have with the BBC exacerbates it when there are complaints against them?
Yeah, I'd say that BBC receives 1,000 complaints on something is probably a bigger story than GB News receives 1,000 complaints on something, because it's the BBC. You're right that, you know, there are motivations there, but also the fact that there are just so many more people watching it, so many more people have heard of it, because I guess, you know, we're speaking from your studio bunker, which is, you know, we're in the media bubble, right? And so we're very interested in GB News, but it has got a fair audience. But there still must be millions of people out there who have never watched. I mean, there are millions and millions of people out there who have never watched it. And so it is less of a big deal than the BBC. And maybe we just need to be watching it 14 hours a day.
It's a bit like getting the right people for the job rather than the most talented people for the job, and that can maybe make it a bit more seamless. So, for example, I'd say Tom Harwood is not as good a broadcaster as Andrew Neil, let's say. I think that's probably a fairly objective thing to put there. But he clearly wants to do what GB News is doing as a project in a way that Andrew Neil just simply didn't. So is it... have they lined that up correctly, that eventually it's them teething problem then going, well, we might as well have people who aren't as good at the job but are totally on board with the project, as opposed to getting these star signings who then can throw it into a bit of a mess?
Yeah, I think absolutely. That's probably, that's not just a media thing, is it? I think you get people who want to work for your company, and that's how startups succeed, by finding people who really buy into the vision. So yeah, that makes sense. And actually, alluding back to one of your points from earlier, but I guess if you're GB News and you're thinking we want to come across as this anti-establishment startup, then maybe even Tom Harwood is better, because then you've got viewers who are rooting for him, whereas Andrew Neil's an establishment figure who doesn't really need to be rooted for.
But they then simultaneously again are going for the extreme end of the establishment, it would seem to me, by getting people like Jacob Rees-Mogg to replace Mark Steyn. Does it feel like there's much... I don't know if you've just been speaking about their strategy there, but on the bigger names, does it feel like there's anything particularly cohesive there? Because people like Rees-Mogg and Lee Anderson feel a bit like, well, Talk TV has got Nadine Dorries, so why not? Why don't we get them?
I don't know. I think probably there is a bit of a strategy there. I think they know who their audience are and who their audience are interested in. And Jacob Rees-Mogg probably ticks most of the boxes, as does Lee Anderson.
Why do you think Jacob Rees-Mogg does, though? Because to me, he's quite clearly a very posh man. And this seems like a channel which is meant to be for the everyman. Why do you think he actually manages to fit into that Venn diagram?
I don't know. That's an interesting question that probably goes a bit deeper than our conversation. But I don't know. Is there something in the fact that he's a posh man, but he's also kind of seen as having quite controversial and anti-establishment views? Is there something in that? I don't know. I mean, I remember I've written a bit about... I'm not relating the two of them at all, but I remember I've written and investigated David Icke a few times in the past, and I think something that... I think it was a Press Gazette commenter, actually, a point that they made was the reason that David Icke does so well is because in terms of he's such a successful conspiracy theorist, which I'm not suggesting that's, that's what Jacob Rees-Mogg is at all. But part of the success of David Icke is that he's got these completely mad conspiracy theories. Whether he believes them or not, I don't know. But he's also a former BBC broadcaster. He's got quite a posh accent. He's a white man. So that's kind of like... he's not the sort of person you'd expect to have these wild
views. The establishment turning on the establishment gives it a sort of veneer of...
yeah.
near of respectability, mate.
Yeah, and like I say, I shouldn't really compare Jacob Rees-Mogg to David Icke, but maybe there's just something in the fact that with Jacob Rees-Mogg, he's a posh man who you'd expect to be establishment through and through, and yet he's got these views that probably align with a lot of GB News' audience.
What have you thought of all these people who are just not really journalists or TV presenters being given really high-profile TV gigs? Does that seem very... It always seems quite strange to me. Like, Nadine Dorries just doesn't seem massively, massively good.
Yeah, well, I haven't watched too much of her stuff, to be honest. but I don't know. I guess it's an interesting time politically for that, because these are people who have been at the top of the government, and all of a sudden, not very long afterwards, they're available, and their views probably align with people who watch GB News and possibly people who watch Talk TV. Although I think probably there's less of a strong identity, at least in my mind, about who watches Talk TV. But yeah, I guess that's it. And then is also related to this virality that we're talking about? If Tom Harwood says something controversial on GB News, it could go viral. But if Jacob Rees-Mogg does, or Jacob Rees-Mogg says something insightful about his time in government or about someone who's in power, then that's the sort of thing that's going to attract attention, and that's the sort of thing that is going to keep, you know, political journalists or people in the establishment watching it. And maybe that's not their target audience, but it's useful to have the media watching, because then the media is going to write about you and your audience is going to grow even more. So maybe that's it to an extent.
Well, Nadine Dorries has been really good at breaking exclusives about herself, I've noticed. So maybe
she got that exclusive interview with Boris Johnson.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. Interviewing her best mate was really the scoop of the year.
Mate or hero.
The channel wanted to disrupt. GB News wanted to disrupt things. Has it?
I would say so. Yeah. It's got an audience. It seems to be growing, at least from figures I've seen. It has established itself in the UK media scene, and obviously the figures we spoke about earlier weren't that impressive, but I'd say that as a business and as a broadcaster, I'd say that it has disrupted. Has it disrupted as a journalistic force? I'd say that's probably more debatable, because I think while, like we've been saying, they've got some high-profile presenters who can make for viral clips, and they've got people saying controversial things that go viral on Twitter for the wrong reasons. But yeah, so I'd say in those senses, I think they have disrupted. I think where they haven't disrupted so much is in the more pure journalism side of things. Like I'd say that Talk TV, while it's got a smaller audience and hasn't disrupted so much in that way, it's got Piers Morgan, and he's interviewed Donald Trump and Cristiano Ronaldo, and that's big news. And that, so journalistically, I'd say that Talk TV has actually disrupted more, even though it might not. You wouldn't necessarily say that it's as much of a disruptor, because it's part of News Corp. But so I'd say in that sense, GB News hasn't. But in the sense of grabbing the attention of a reasonable proportion of the population at different times, then yeah, I'd say it has disrupted. And in that sense, it's on the way to success.
Zooming right out, where do you think TV news is going?
So I think it kind of depends on some bigger factors. So the BBC, who wins the next election? What does that mean for the BBC? The licence fee, the future of the licence fee, because the BBC is obviously such a huge force in the UK broadcasting scene. So it really does. It kind of comes down to that. In terms of TV news channels, like BBC News, Sky News, and GB News and Talk TV, those are the main four, I'd say. I think that's all up in the air, really. So the internal note that I mentioned earlier from the chief executive of GB News, he said that we want to establish ourselves as the number one, whatever that means exactly, but the number one news channel in the UK by 2028. And that sounds very bold, because I know there's been a lot of ridicule about GB News's numbers, but actually it's been growing. And some of the figures that I've been shown, admittedly by people who are supportive of GB News, show that it has been making up ground on Sky News, beating it at prime time sometimes. A couple of times it's even overtaken the BBC News channel. And so if they can keep growing at that rate, then I think that GB News is heading in the right direction. We've got lots of uncertainty about the BBC, as I say, and in particular the BBC News channel, because that's being merged with Global News. So you're going to have one channel which is covering BBC, which is covering domestic news and world news. So what does that mean for UK news? Will that drive more people away from BBC News? And then there's a bit of uncertainty about the future of Sky News as well, because Comcast, the American company, bought Sky in 2018. At that point, it committed to keeping Sky News's budget as it was at that time. Don't know exactly what that is, but that commitment presumably runs out in 2028. So what does that mean for the future of Sky News? So there are lots of questions going on. Yeah, so that again, does Talk TV become a force? Does GB News keep growing? Those are the big questions in terms of TV news, I'd say. And broadly, how much of it's going to go online? How many people are really going to be watching TV news? How many people are going to be consuming TV news or broadcast news through TikTok or other platforms? Those are big questions. And then I guess kind of going back to the overriding question about that is how Fox News-ized does the UK TV news industry become? And I guess that kind of depends on all of those factors and whether GB News does become the number one force and how it kind of shapes its future. Does it try and go after those the more, you know, the journalistic scoops, the big interviews, or does it lean more into hiring people like Jacob Rees-Mogg and other politicians and people who are going to create headlines for things they say rather than stories they uncover?
More GB views than GB news.
Yeah, that's it. So it's either heading in the news direction? Is it heading in the views direction? I think I don't have the answer, but I think that'll be a big question for the next, 5 years? 5 years till 2028.
Will, thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you.
Listeners, if you enjoyed this podcast, remember you can back us on Patreon so we can keep making them. There's a link in the show notes, or just search Bunker Patreon Podcast. This is Jacob Jarvis. Thank you for joining me for The Bunker.
The Bunker Daily was written and presented by Jacob Jarvis. The producer was Kasia Tomaszewicz, with audio production by me, Jay Bailey. The group editor is Andrew Harrison, with music by Kenny Dickinson and artwork by James Parrott. The Bunker is a Podmasters production.